Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. In fact, new issue out just yesterday, featuring our first fresh video interview in a while, Nancy Kress, the multi-award-winning science fiction writer, was our guest this month. So you can go check that out at authormagazine.org. I sat down with Nancy, talked about writing, talked about her unusual journey to a writing life. Check it out. In fact, Nancy is going to be at this year's, she's one of the many fabulous teachers at this year's Pacific Northwest Writers Association conference, because Author to Author is funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association. And the PNWA hosts a great writers conference every year, this year between the 16th and 19th of July at the SeaTac Hilton. And Nancy Kress will just be one of the many fabulous authors represented there, teaching and helping aspiring and established writers. So if you want to connect with agents or editors, if you want to connect with other writers, if you're an indie author and you want to learn how to better connect with your readers, go to the PNWA or go to PNWA.org and sign up for the conference today. And speaking of signing up, my guest, I don't know what's happened to her, Laura Berman Fortgang. She is one of the original, one of the first, this is hard to believe now, but one of the first life coaches there ever were. She's the author of Now What? A 90 Days to a New Life Direction, plus a bunch of other books. I'm hoping she still might join me. I had heard from her yesterday saying she was ready to go, but things happen. Things do happen. But I will tell you, interesting, I love life coaching. It's new evolution in services people offer. In fact, I work with clients, and I describe myself to them as a life coach for writers. And what does that mean? Well, to me, coaching is sort of life coaching, what is called life coaching, is sort of spirituality meets therapy. And for me, spirituality, spiritual teaching, whatever that is the practice of unconditional happiness, or to put it another way, it is the practice of not looking to conditions to determine how you feel. And this, to me, is essential for writers, because for writers, the conditions would be essentially what other people think, the conditions of whether the book you're writing has been published or not, whether you've won awards or not, how big your contracts are, what your writing group thinks, what your agent or editor thinks. And I'm hoping, I see a phone number, and I'm hoping this is my guest right now. Let's see if this is her. Laura, is that you?
It is your guest who's sitting here waiting for you to call me.
Oh, God.
Sorry about that.
Well, now that's okay. We're a little lower tech, Laura, but I'm so glad you figured it out, because you're just that bright, and I knew you would. Well, welcome to the show, Laura.
Thank you.
You know, I did a little intro, and I was really looking forward to talking to you, because it's really funny. The first life coach I ever interviewed for this magazine, for this show, was Michael Neal, and this was about 4 or 5 years ago, 5 years ago maybe now. And when I did it, I had to have him explain to sort of people what a life coach was, right? That is certainly not the case anymore, because I've interviewed, I think, 3 life coaches in the last 6 weeks. But you, Laura, you're one first. Is this true?
It is true. I mean, I'm not the first. I consider myself like second generation, because I learned from the people who are already out there. But there was 16 people in the first class at Coach University, and we were the same 16 people who created the ICF, the International Coach Federation. So that's,
do you mind me asking, what, 23 years ago? 23 years ago. Wow. You know what else is interesting about – so do you know Michael Neal? Have you met him?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
I've met him.
I think he's a great teacher. But what I find interesting about the two of you is you share a lot of things in common. But I don't know if you're familiar, but his career trajectory is similar to yours in this way. in that when he wanted to be an actor, a comedic actor, and in fact, mm-hmm. he tells the story of he had finally gotten his chance to go perform with Second City and was torn up about it because he had started coaching people and thought, God, if I do that, I won't be able to coach people anymore. And that's when he realized where he was really headed. And you too started on the stage, didn't you? Musical theater, is that true?
Theater. My parents wouldn't let me be a theater major in college, so I did every non-major show that you could do. And then I was actually, you know, I was actually less afraid to go to New York City and try than I was to write a resume and get a job.
Really?
So I just, yeah, I just felt like I didn't want to be 35 and not have tried and then perhaps unable to try because maybe I'd have a family or maybe I'd be in a job or whatever. So I just, like, took off and did it. And, you know, no regrets, but it, you know, I stayed longer at the fair than I had intended to.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I was still writing on tables,
yeah,
almost a decade into it, I was like, yeah, no, I'm done.
Right, yeah. And so this led you, how did this lead you to, I want to get to now what, but how did this lead you, because it's so interesting to me, because I do coaching now too for writers. I tell them I'm not an editor, I'm not a book doctor, I'm a life coach for writers, but I never would have thought I would do that 20 years ago when I was just wanting to write and do all the, and doing theater and that sort of thing. So, but now I find myself doing it. So how did you make that transition from someone who wanted to be on the stage to someone who is helping other people in these ways?
Well, first I had to have a nervous breakdown, and I say that, first
yes.
I had a nervous breakdown, which is true, 100% true.
Yes.
But
yeah.
When I came out on the other side of it, I was a much more compassionate person than I was prior. And I also just had more intuitive access to myself. And I just kept having this intuitive flash that I should call this old acting mentor of mine. And I really didn't know why, and I tried to ignore it. But I called him, and it turned out he had become a coach, and he thought he could help me figure out what else I wanted to do with my life. So I was a client first.
Right.
And started teaching presentation skills in companies because that kind of made sense, you know, the actor, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And soon was like, no, I want to do what you do. And that was just at the time that Thomas Leonard was starting Coach University. So that's how it happened. And it makes a lot of sense to me in retrospect. You know, in retrospect, I was a self-help junkie, and I found a way to make money at that. And also all those years on the stage have served me incredibly well now as a speaker, and I really built my coaching practice by speaking. So in retrospect, there were no mistakes at all. Added up.
No, there are never any mistakes. You're probably familiar with the old spiritual idiom that nothing is done to you, it's only done for you. Have you heard that one? That's a good one. But it's true, isn't it?
It is a good one. But it always sounds better in retrospect. Like, yes, I can definitely
see
that now.
You know, it's funny. I wrote a lot of books and they got rejected, and I was absolutely miserable about it at the time. You mean I hated every one of those letters that came across that said no. But all of them led me to the work I'm doing now that I just love. And so if you had told me at the time all this was being done for me, I would have punched you in the nose. But
it
was true. But it was true. It was really, it wasn't just some clever little aphorism. It's true.
It is. It really is. And it's hard to, you know, keep your wits about you when it's happening, but if you hang in there long enough, it usually turns out to be a good story.
Well,
it was for me.
Do you work with I know you work with all types of people, and you do a lot of work with people around their careers. Is that so? Is that often one of the reasons?
Yeah. I mean, it always, even though I, you know, came up through the life coaching world, I always tended to attract people who wanted to work on their career. And then after 9/11, it was a direct correlation between that event and me becoming one-on-one, I solely work with people to figure out what they want to do with their lives. I mean, some people come in and say, I know I want to build a business, help me do that. But most of the time, it's helping people figure out what they want to do. And oddly, when I do corporate work, it has nothing to do with that. So that's in my private practice. Is, and I love it. I mean, my assistant used to say, I have a really lost one for you, because the further away people were for an answer, the more I loved it.
To talk about that, so because one of my favorite teachers is a woman named Anat Banil, who worked with my son and does a lot of work with children on with all kinds of physical challenges. And she said, I love failure, what she called failure, because that's where the growth, that's where potential was, that's where the growth happened. And so you love it when someone comes to you really lost. Why is that? Why is that so exciting?
Because I mean, I know they don't know if they're ever going to get to the clarity, but I'm confident that they are. And it's just so fun. I mean, I don't enjoy other people's pain, but I mean, it's just so gratifying when the little light bulbs start going off and when you can help people, you know, pull apart the spaghetti that has become the confusion and turn it into something that they can see their way through. So that's just lovely to see, and it's great to see people really get a sense of themselves, because that's what really comes out of the Now What process, is you're getting a sense of who you are and what you want, and when you have that, it just seems so much easier to go out and get it.
Yes, it does. And I would think your own personal experience is that moment when you thought to yourself that you had that impulse to call your old acting coach. I would think that those kinds of experiences are invaluable in terms of teaching you what it means to listen to your intuition, teaching you in a practical way the value of it. Has that been the case for you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest events, the biggest positive events for me in my life all came from intuitive nudges, even though I couldn't tell you for sure at the time that it was an intuitive nudge. Like, I've even walked away from a big corporate contract, and it was weird. There was a bunch of my colleagues, we're all sitting around, we're about to enter this big thing, you know, back when there wasn't as much corporate coaching available as it is now. And
right.
It was a big, you know, financial breakthrough for everyone, and I just surprised myself and said, you know, this opportunity is not for me. Thanks, everybody. And I watched everybody's jaw just drop as I walked out the room, and I didn't even know why I was doing it. And about a month later, I landed my first book deal. Without even trying. I mean, I didn't put out a proposal or anything. So, So I can definitely point to many places where I follow the nudge of intuition to good things. And I do really feel that since things have been, you know, changing dramatically year after year over the last 15 years or 20 years since the internet came in, that we just don't have the same rules to follow anymore when it comes to work. So intuition plays a huge part. So I definitely feel like not just myself, but a lot of coaches are the person there holding people to the fire to listen to their intuition and get going with whatever is inkling, you know, whatever's trying to emerge.
Yeah. It's a tricky thing to teach in a way because it's not like teaching. Maybe it is. I always liken it to, I was taught how to be a high hurdler when I was in high school, and that was such a clear thing. Get your body to do this. I did it again and again and again and again. But intuition is the same kind of practice, but you're tuning into something that no one else can see, hear, taste, or touch. But it's the same practice in a way.
It is, in the sense that you have to harness it, like the same way you're going to, you know, harness the energy of your body to do something extraordinary. You have to harness it and build trust with it. And, you know, and sometimes you read it wrong. That's just the way it is. You know, when I'm speaking to audiences, I'll make people raise their hand. I'll say, you know, how many times have you had a hunch that you shouldn't work with a certain person or you shouldn't do a certain business deal, and you overrode it with your logic? All the hands go up. But how many people can say that, you know, a month later, 6 months later, 2 years later, it blew up in your face? Exactly what you thought was going to happen did. And they all raised their hands. So, you know, we have proof of those times when we, you know, overrule our intuition with our left side logical linear thinking and then pay the price. So I find it interesting that we don't trust our intuition more, since so many of us have experience with it being, you know, pretty reliable.
And so,
and I'm
intuition
not talking like psychic premonitions as just like little nudges, you know.
Well, what is writing? So this is, ostensibly I do this show for writers, but the motto is, what it takes to write the book you want to write is what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. And part of that is the writer has to, especially the creative writer, has, because they start with nothing except a nudge in many ways. One of the best stories is The Sound and the Fury by William Faulkner. Was begun, this is the Nobel Prize winning, blah, 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 big book, big deal book, was started because he had an image of a girl's soiled underwear hanging from a tree. That was the thought he had in his head, and that led to this book. How did he know that? Well, he followed his intuition. And I assume that Now What, which is part of the reason I had you on today, the re-release of Now What, 90 Days to a New Life Direction, is in part about intuition and having in its role in your new life direction. Is that so?
Oh, absolutely. It's all about clearing the way, peeling back the onion and clearing the way for you to hear and honor and respect those intuitive pieces. And, you know, a lot of it is intuition and a lot of it is what I call following your life blueprint. Like, we don't look at resumes. And the Now What book does not honor your resume. We honor your life story. And, you know, what is it that's built you to be who you are today, and how do we leverage that into career satisfaction and advancement?
And
so that's what,
why
now what
did it,
90 days.
And why did we? Why was it released? Why the re-released? What prompted that for you?
Well, first of all, it's never gone off the market in 10 years. So there was the hardcover version in 2004, the paperback in 2005, and then it never went out of print, which is pretty miraculous in today's world. And therefore, I also have been training coaches on it for 10 years, and they've been using it with clients. So it's not, and I attract clients that want to do that. So it's not gone out of favor. And I just had learned so much in 10 years about what worked, what didn't, you know, better stories and interesting stories, and not just my experience, the experience of 500 coaches and their clients. So there was so much more to say. And also, you know, the book business has changed, and there's a lot of bells and whistles in this book. Like, there's QR codes that take you to more material online. So it was just really fun to give it an overhaul and to tell some new stories and tweak some of the exercises and put some new exercises in that had been working. And so it's been a laboratory for 10 years, and it deserved another round. And plus, it hasn't become obsolete in terms of people having to reinvent completely, especially after 2008-2009 crash, recession, whatever we call it.
If ever there was a time for people, given the way the internet has allowed such flexibility in terms of career, to ask themselves, what do I really want to do? I feel like the time has never been better for that than it is now. We have so many more options open to us than I think were open a generation ago. At least it seems that way to me.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm 50-ish, and so if you call the generation before me is my father, and, you know, my dad came from the get a job and stay with a job, company your whole life. That blew up in the end, but he almost got there, and it's just so different now. You know, we don't stay very long. We stay where as long as it takes for us to get what we need, and then we hopefully move on to something better. There isn't company loyalty anymore. You're not going to have a lifetime of loyalty. And, you know, finances have changed for people. You know, this generation is not going to do as well as their parents in terms of at least savings or having pensions or, you know, just so many things have changed. So I just think in some ways it's a great time. I mean, you can work from home. You can job share, you can lean in, you know, whichever one you want to do. There's, you know, there's different ways to approach career, and you just have to be creative, and I guess it takes courage too, but I kind of downplay that part. I think it's just like when you're clear, it's not about courage, it's just about doing what's in front of you.
You know what? That is so true, Laura. You just said that, and what always reminds me of that is my relationship to my wife. I used to ask girls out when I was a young man, and it was so frightening. It seemed like it took courage to ask them out. But when I saw my wife, and I saw her on stage performing when I was 17, I said, that is it. And when I had to call her without ever having met her, I had no fear because I was so clear that I wanted to get to know her. Isn't that odd? But it was true. I had no fear. And I was always afraid of asking girls out as a kid. But not that time.
That's a great comparison.
So this book is awesome, really, and it's got a lot of great stuff, but the chapter that really resonated with me because of the nature of my life was chapter 5, and I'd love you to talk about this. Chapter 5 says, your purpose in life is right under your nose. What do you mean? How could that be?
What I mean is that a lot of people think, a life purpose has to be like a Mother Teresa or a Gandhi level of purpose. You know, like there has to be
right.
some grand thing that I'm meant to do or to really make a difference in the world or whatever. And, that kind of thinking will have you suffering for a long time. The truth
yeah.
is, you know, we all have a ripple effect. So that's what I mean by right under our nose. Like you're already being a certain way. You're already doing certain things that have an impact. The criteria for whether you have a purpose is, you know, you can't do it alone in a vacuum. So it has to do with something you already really do or are and how it affects other people. Those are your two criteria. And, you know, unless you want to fly airplanes or, you know, do surgery, you probably can do whatever it is that you naturally do right away.
Yeah.
I tell people it's time to turn up the volume on it, you know. So, for example, you know, my story and our story of actors, like I did my thing and I thought I had failed.
Right.
But the truth was that sorry, you hear a doorbell in the background. the truth is that I was up for a scholarship. The same person who ended up being my coach gave me a scholarship years back to an acting program. And the question that they asked that got me the scholarship was, what would be possible if you achieved your dream to be a performer? And I answered it kind of from the eldest child right answer kind of thing. I didn't even think of the impact of my answer. I said, oh, you know, if I were successful as a performer, someone would see me on stage and be inspired to change something in their life, or they'd watch a play and it would move them to understand a relationship and they'd go work on their relationship in their life. And it wasn't
right.
until 10 years later when I was already being a coach that I realized what I had said. What I had said was,
yeah.
the actor part was one vehicle, but the piece that was the purpose piece was to impact change from the stage. And I do that now.
Yeah.
So was it a failure? No, it was just a misinterpretation of what my dream was.
Right.
So I think everyone has a purpose, and it is exactly how you impact the world. I mean, even the biggest schmo, someone will stand up at their funeral and say, you know, if he weren't so tough on me, I would have never
yeah.
learned to be independent. You know, that was a purpose
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
So it's whatever our ripple effect is, naturally, it doesn't matter what your job description is, how do people use you? What do people always seem to say about you? You know, and even if someone says to you, oh, you're so funny, you should be a comedian, you may not want to live out of a suitcase and, you know, try out your material in a dive bar. But what they're saying is use your humor. So each of us has something that is truly how we impact the world in big and small ways. And back to the Mother Teresa thing, Mother Teresa didn't wake up one day and say, hey, if I pick up this sick guy in the street, I'm going to be canonized for sainthood. I mean, that was not her line of thinking.
Right.
Right? It was just what was
right.
in front of her. So we all
yeah.
have we all have a choice about what's in front of us. And that's what chapter 5 is. Your purpose in life is right under your nose.
It's so true. And I think, you know, what's deceiving about that, and I know it was for me, because part of my purpose in life is I love to inspire people. I give talks and this sort of thing. But the very first time I ever did that, I was very nervous about it. I'd never done it before. Someone had booked me for 2 hours and paid me all this money. I was stunned and frightened and intimidated, but I did it. The old actor in me got up there and did it, and it was going along. But the most profound moment was in the middle of it. And this is what I thought of as you were talking about this. In the middle of it, I had to make a point, and I'd kind of prepared what I was going to say. And what I said didn't seem like enough, and so I improvised and began telling a story. But it was a kind of story. It was the exact same story I told before. I told it to my wife. I told it to my mother, friends. It was just one of the many stories I keep cataloged in my head. And I told it to these people exactly as I had always told it. And there they were, all these people with paid money to come hear me speak, sitting there. And it hit me at once that I was doing at this moment, having success, quote unquote, simply doing what I had always been doing. That life, in a way, had been preparing me for this moment. But I just like to tell stories, and that's all I had to do. Does that make sense?
Totally, totally. And I think everybody's
profound,
life
Laura.
Is preparing. Yeah, it is profound. And yet it's right. It was always there. And
always
that's what I mean. And it's always there. And I've seen, you know, upon the discovery, it doesn't always mean you have to have this radical career change. It just means you have to do more of that thing. It could be right in the job that you're in right now. Just, you know, speak more or write more or, you know, be the person who sees the forest through the trees more or whatever it is. And I kind of find it has like, it almost has like a flow to it. Once you start doing it, you'll be expunged from a job you don't want and you'll find the next one just by being more of that.
Right. It's like, don't look for what you don't have. Look for more of what you do have.
Right. And the motto of the Now What book is, it's not what you do that's going to make you happy. It's not what you do for a living that makes you happy. It's who that job allows you to be. That's what brings you the satisfaction.
We have time for a couple more questions. I have someone on the line who would like to ask you something. Maybe he wants to be coached.
Okay.
I don't know. Jeff, how are you doing? Is that you?
I'm well, Bill. Another excellent show. I really like these back-to-back shows with life with coaches and mentors. You know, that's what you and I both do. So it's wonderful to glean such incredible information and important information from my own work from these amazing guests you have. So thank you for that, first and foremost. And Laura, what a great title, Now What? Perfect in its simplicity, but it says so much. And I have to say, you've kind of burst my bubble about being canonized. I'll have to go to Plan B on that one. But I have a two-part question.
What's Plan B?
My question is two-part, if I may take the time to ask. Sure. Was there a serendipitous event you had where you got advice which truly had an epiphanous effect on your life and work, and your thoughts on the importance and value of having a mentor?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, what do you got?
All right, so the first thing that comes to mind is, I don't know, synchronicity. I don't know, it was a great question. When I was back in my waitressing days and kind of still in my suffering days, this guy asked me to marry him, so that I'm married to now for 23 years. And, you know, I had sworn I'd never get married and never have kids. I was going to be everyone's auntie Mame to their kids. And, you know, I was having a really hard time with it. And this wise bartender at the place where I worked, his name was Mohan. He had a shiny bald head, a big fuller brush mustache. He was older than me, way older. He wore white all the time because he was also a yogi and a masseur and a bartender. And he just looked... and he just looked over the bar one night and he goes, "Honey, what does your soul say?" And he said it like that. It was like very flamboyant. And that question just struck me like right between the eyes and right in the heart. And I've been married to the guy ever since.
Wow.
So that was a one question changed my life thing. And the importance of a mentor or a coach, I'm a little biased, but I think that it's invaluable because I know I'm always looking. I always have mentors of one kind or another, or I'll hire a coach once a year for a certain period of time to work on a specific thing. And I just know that A, it's going to shorten your learning curve. B, you're going to be held accountable to do more than you might do on your own. And C, relationships are the vehicle by which we grow. So it's always going to be like, you know, turning something in the ocean and it washes up on the shore as something else, you know. So I am totally thumbs up about mentorship or a coach. So I hope that's helpful to you. Thanks for asking.
It's a great question he asked. And we still have a couple minutes. Do you enjoy writing? Is it a big challenge or do you find it gratifying? Both.
I will quote Dorothy Parker. I don't love writing. I love having written.
Okay.
You know,
I know that one.
I suffered terribly through my first two books, but I have to say that I like writing. Every now and then I really want to write. Like, I want to write. Like, I have to write. And it doesn't matter if it's good or bad. But when you say you're going to commit to a book, it does put that vice on you because you know it has to be 50,000 words or more, and you know, it's not easy. Even after six, I wrote a little one late in the fall actually of last year, and it's, you know, it's hard.
I know. That's why I coach writers. That's why I coach writers. It's challenging for all of us. Well, then on that note, even though it's hard, as you say, I'd like you to answer one more question for me, Laura, and I'd like you to finish this sentence. You ready?
Okay.
If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what? What has it taught you?
Tenacity.
You weren't tenacious before this? Boy, I bet you were tenacious. But it taught you it even
probably.
More so. Now.
More so. I mean, you're up against it, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you're up. The first one especially. I mean, I didn't look to write a book. I never had written anything other than a one-page newsletter. I'd never written a proposal. I barely had to write a proposal. I kind of bought it sight unseen. And then there was this tremendous pressure because I had so many colleagues who were like, why you? You know, why they pick you out of all of us?
Right.
So, you know, yeah. Yeah, I don't like to think about that
yeah.
one. They got easier as you went on.
Tenacity. Well, that's awesome.
Well,
Laura, thank you so much for remembering to call in, and we connected. I'm so happy. This has been awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I was sitting here all along, just thought you were calling me.
Next time I'll read the instructions
more carefully.
Thank you for having me. You're very welcome. Good luck with the book.
Thanks.
Tenacity, everybody. It's true. It's true. Get yourself a coach. It's not a bad idea. It's great. I quite like it. Kind of in the same vein, next week I'm going to be talking to Roger Teal, Dr. Roger Teal, about how life is joy. Ah, it is. I believe it. But until then, what I want you to do is go do something you love, just like Laura suggested, because what you love is right under your nose, and if you do it enough, it will bring you the success, whatever that is, that you're probably waiting for. You haven't found it already.